AT&T, rates, terms, and conditions are available. How may I help you?
I'm sorry, I must have misdialed something.
Thank you, sorry.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah.
We have in Skype line Rob P. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do. Good evening.
And a very Merry Christmas to everybody, and a Happy Hanukkah, because they both came on the same day this year. Who knew?
Okay.
They converge.
Yeah. The last time that happened, if my records are correct, was 2005. And the next time it'll happen is 2035. So this is a very special occasion. And I think it only happened about four times over the last 100 years. So, yeah, big deal. Big deal. But it doesn't stop us from being on the air here on WBAI because, you know, things have to move forward. And, here we are on a holiday. And, in fact, next year... next week will be next year, and that'll be New Year's Day, and we'll be on the air again then.
Wow.
We're all
indeed.
So happy about this. We're all so thrilled. That's great. Well, listen, I want to thank everybody who called in last week. We had our first phone-in show last week. And, boy, you know, I have to tell you, the phone never stopped ringing. It was just, you know, you hung it up and immediately it started ringing again. This right here is the difference between a podcast and a radio show. Now, we do the podcast. We do Overtime follows on YouTube at 8 o'clock, and we're doing that tonight. But last week we took phone calls over the air, not on the podcast, and the difference was night and day. We have to beg for calls on the podcast, but on the radio they come pouring in. So the beauty is you never know how many people are out there listening. You never know who you're going to talk to next. And that's the magic of radio. That's why we do this. And that's why I hope that people will continue to support WBAI. Our fundraiser goes until the end of the year. And as you can see, it's a lot more, better structured. It's lower key. We're not constantly hawking various premiums and things like that. We're talking about preserving the radio station, about having 99.5 FM remain a non-commercial bastion of thought, debate, music, all kinds of alternative thoughts. You can be a part of that by going to buddy.wbai.org and becoming a BAI buddy, which involves a monthly subscription of one sort or another. You decide how much you want to pay each month, and you can vote in BAI elections. You can basically consider yourself part of the BAI family, but it's so important that we get to our goal by the end of the year. Go ahead, Gil.
Just wanted to make one point, which is that when you become a BAI buddy, there is a drop-down on the website that asks you what show you want to be a buddy of. or more grammatically correctly than that, but what show you're supporting. Please, please, please make sure that you're choosing Off the Hook from that drop-down menu when you become a BAI buddy. Becoming a general BAI buddy is great. Becoming a buddy in the name of our show is actually even better. And we appreciate it on all counts, but thank you.
Well, you just answered Paul's question. Paul is a listener who wrote into us and said, if I had $1,000 to spare, I would take you up on your offer of being pro-Trump for an hour. Okay, what I did last week, and I already regret it, was say I would go pro-Trump for an entire hour if somebody pledged $1,000 to the radio station. I can do it. I can be conservative. I can. It's very easy. It's very easy. You just have to be selfish. You just have to say my way or no way. I'm not going to give it away now. You got to pledge $1,000 first. Paul continues. What do you mean? Who would that serve? I guess I was questioning it back then. I guarantee you, at least a few of your listeners would enjoy it. And I don't doubt that. I imagine you guys might enjoy it as well. If I want to make a more modest donation, like $25 to become a BAI buddy, can I do so as an off-the-hook fan, or does it all have to go through the generic WBAI donation site? Well, Paul, I hope you're listening, because Gila just explained that, yes, you can go to the BAI website, and you can pick your favorite show, and if your favorite show happens to be Off the Hook, you can select Off the Hook, and, that way it's a check mark for us as well.
Absolutely, and as we often point out, this is the only thing that keeps WBAI on the air. We don't get government grants. We don't have paid commercials. We don't have any of that stuff that the mainstream commercial radio industry depends on. All we have is you out there listening and deciding that what you're hearing is good enough to show a little support for and throwing in at buddy.wbai.org. WBAI went on the air January 8th, 1960. That is almost 65 years ago. In a couple of weeks, it'll be 65 years of WBAI being kept on the air just by you. Maybe not you specifically who's listening right now, but you out there in our listenership who have been deciding that, yeah, this is worth having. This is worth happening. And, buddy.wbai.org.
Holy cow. Are you going to ask why I just said holy cow on the air?
I was curious.
I am also curious.
Someone has to ask.
Emmanuel, why did you say holy cow?
All at once, one at a time. Good Lord. It's like our first day on the radio.
All right, so why did you say holy cow?
Alex, well may you ask why I said holy cow. But when Rob just recited that bit of history there, I realized that this is December 25th. Next week is January 1st. The week after that will be January 8th. We will be on the air on the 65th anniversary of WBAI to the day. And if we don't plan something special for that, I have nothing left to say. Give it, please.
I'll make cake.
Okay, that's not going to help our listeners much, unless we get all their addresses or something. But
it just meant for us.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not sure how we're in different places. We're all in different places, so I'm not sure how that'll help exactly. But
will
you know,
we'll have cake.
Actually, you guys are in the same place. That's true. But maybe you can nail something. But yeah, 65 years. Think about that. That's incredible. And another reason why supporting WBAI is so important. Think of any other any other radio station around that has lasted that long. The reason we have lasted that long, it's simple. It's you. It's the listeners. And when the listeners take charge, things last. Things get done properly. So that says a lot. That says a hell of a lot. So please, buddy.wbai.org is the website. Pledge generously. If Off the Hook is a program that you can stand, that you can tolerate, then check us off on the list as the show you're pledging for.
Absolutely. There's just a little bit of time left if you're concerned with taxes and things and the implications of giving donations and you want to get those in before the calendar year is up. You know, now is the time. It's nearing the end of when you're able to do that. So if you go to buddy.wbai.org, or you could call our cool pledge line, which is 833-WBAI-NYC, or if you'd like the digits, it's 833-922-4692. And you could talk to somebody who can take your pledge information and all of that good stuff and just let them know that you're here for WBAI, you're here for Off the Hook. You think this should all keep going on.
And you mentioned we're nonprofit. Gil, I believe you know something about how that works.
Boy, do I. So if you are a person who is subject to making required minimum distributions from your individual retirement account and you want to do that, there's a qualifying charitable distribution option that you can use to give a gift to your, well, wherever, but you can make your RMD without being subject to taxes. If you make a qualifying charitable distribution, you can look up the Pacifica Foundation and find out our tax ID number and make some or all of your RMD for this year to the Pacifica Foundation as a qualifying charitable distribution. Also, if you are a person who has a donor-advised fund, if you have matching gifts from your employer, these are all really, really, really awesome things to do, and the clock is very much ticking because a lot of these things turn over on December 31st, so you have about a week. But these are all really wonderful things to do, and your financial advisors can help you work that sort of thing out. But, yeah, if you have RMD dollars left for 2024, WBAI and the Pacifica Foundation are a pretty great place to send them.
And you mentioned that December 31st is about a week away. It's exactly a week away. In fact, next week at this time, it will be New Year's Eve. I don't know what we'll be doing. But one thing we try to do on this program at the end of the year is talk about our wishes for the year ahead and maybe some of the things, monumental things that have happened in the year that is concluding. I'd like to invite our listeners to be a part of that as well. If you have a wish for 2025 in the world of technology, hacking, privacy, whatever you feel is relevant to the subjects we talk about, email us, oth@2600.com, with your thoughts. Also, if there's something that you want to mark as a significant event in the previous year, you can include that as well. Again, oth@2600.com. Next week we'll be going over some of the highlights and our wishes for the future. Now, last week during the call-in program, we pretty much talked about the drones. Do you notice how people aren't talking about the drones anymore? I don't know why that is. Nothing really changed. But it's sort of what I predicted. It's sort of what I thought would happen, that people would freak out for a little while, and then all of a sudden, they'd get distracted by something else. But if you look up in the sky, you'll probably still see them. There's all kinds of things up in the air. We did get some mail on the subject. Here's something from RH. I'm listening to your broadcast of the 18th of December. And just wanted to chime in that it is actually difficult, or at least difficult for me, to spot aircraft during the day. Well, yeah, that's definitely true. It's harder without those lights that you see at night. When I discovered FlightRadar24.com many years ago, I spent some time on a roof in Brooklyn watching planes. Even though I had a live map of flights approaching, most of them on their way to LaGuardia and JFK, so not particularly high, I actually knew where to look for them. It was actually hard to find them if they were more than a half mile off. Often I could hear them before I could see them. I can't explain this. It might just be me. No, I don't think it is just you. I think we all have that issue. It's an easy enough thing for you to test for yourself, though. On a clear night, on the other hand, it's very easy to spot them from miles away. And yes, RH, I think that is the issue, that you can spot them from miles away, and they seem closer than they are. And if they're approaching, they seem to be approaching very slowly, when in fact they're moving at aircraft speed. So there are numerous factors at play here. And if you're looking up at the sky, looking for things, you will find things. You'll find all kinds of things. You'll see stars, planets, satellites, airplanes, and all kinds of other flying objects that are hard to identify at night that have lights on them. And you will certainly see drones as well. Now, there is something that has sort of been clarified since last week. I think we might have even mentioned this. And a lot of people have been talking about this, people who are demanding some kind of action. They are saying that radioactive isotopes are being searched for by drones. But in fact, if you go to fact-checking websites, we went to USA Today on this one, turns out that this is a false report. No drones were used in the search for the substance. That's according to a spokesperson for the New Jersey agency in charge of overseeing its recovery. And that's why the reason for that is the first drone sightings predate the misplacement of the substance by 2 weeks. So it doesn't really make much sense. Now, the there was a report filed with the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission after a trace amount of the radioactive isotope germanium-68 went missing from a shipping container in early December in New Jersey. So if you have come across a trace amount of germanium-68, there are some people who would like to talk to you about that. But that's not the reason why there are drones in the air. At least that's not the main reason, if there are any drones at all. Any other comments on drones before we move on? Alex, do you have any updates? Have you been looking at the skies recently?
I have been looking at the skies, and I'm in Pennsylvania at the moment, but when I drove out here for our bit of a holiday break here, it was still daylight, so I wasn't able to compare my experience of the night sky, paying close attention to it as I did a couple of weeks ago with my latest journey across northern New Jersey. But I do think that what we saw a couple of weeks ago was a sky filled very much with drones. And I've been thinking a lot about what we discussed last week, which was whether it was something that we had just perceived in the sky, namely that, you know, because we're paying attention to the sky, that we're seeing all these drones. I don't think it was right, because I do pay attention to the sky quite a bit no matter what. I mean, I'm always looking up at the sky. And I noticed there was a big difference between the sky in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. So I'm not entirely convinced that this was all some kind of mass hysteria or hallucination on the part of everybody seeing these drones. I think that what we had discussed last week is possibly still applicable, namely that whoever could be responsible for flying these massive drones around might have realized that it's not a good idea to continue to doing this type of thing. So they might have moved on to a new location or just grounded them for the time being. But I have a feeling they're going to show up again.
Yeah, you see, I'm not so... first of all, what we're talking about here might be two different things. I know you mentioned that Pennsylvania had significantly less sky traffic than New Jersey, which to me makes perfect sense. That would hold true for drones as well. And I would imagine you'd probably see the same thing if you were to go to New Jersey now. You'd probably see more activity in the sky than if you went to Pennsylvania. I don't think there are less drones in the sky. I think people just aren't thinking about it as much. And I think, you know, the danger is that January is going to come around and people are going to forget about this. And then they're going to say, oh, yeah, Trump fixed that. You know, he came in and he got rid of all the drones. When, in fact, no such thing happened. When, you know, we've been looking up at the sky and reporting everything that moves as a drone, and then all of a sudden everybody calms down, and really nobody did anything and nobody changed anything. I don't know. It strikes me as a little worrisome that we're so easily fascinated by objects and so quickly lose interest in them.
I think this is dangerous too. I think that, especially if you consider the amount of credible people that had seen this, including State Senator-elect Andy Kim from New Jersey, who posted about this.
Alex, your microphone cut out again. I don't know how you have the worst equipment every week.
How the hell that happened? That's so bizarre. I don't know how that happened.
Every week. Anyhow. Every week is another mystery. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
Anyhow, what I was saying is, you know, there are a lot of credible people that had seen these drones, including Senator-elect Andy Kim from New Jersey, who posted about this quite extensively on Twitter, X, whatever we want to call it these days. And so I think that it is dangerous for us to go into a new administration when no additional information is given to the public about this, because it opens up the door then for the Trump administration to come in and act like we're the savior. We're now going to give you the information. We're going to provide this transparency now to the people that the Biden administration was hiding from you. And I think that could be a way for them to establish a better rapport with the American people, and especially those Democratic voters that didn't support the Trump administration during this last election.
Which I imagine would be most of them.
Well, look at New York, though. I mean, New York had a massive influx of Trump voters. I mean, talking about, you know, Manhattan in particular. You know, it's getting a little scary out there.
It is. It is. And we're going to see what people voted for, what they get. But, you know, going through some headlines, I've got a headline I just want to hold up to everybody, that, which is still true. Trump guilty on all counts, front page of the New York Times earlier this year. I just wanted to share that, make people remember what's true and what is not true. Still guilty on all counts. But he's going to pardon himself and put himself in power. All right. We have other stories to talk about, though, other important things. For instance, there's an Indiana bakery that's still using Commodore 64s that were released back in 1982 as cash registers. Basically, 42 years ago is when these things debuted. This bakery was identified as the Hillegas Bakery in Brownsburg, Indiana. The last publicly posted picture of the Commodore 64 register was in 2021, but they were called by TomsHardware.com, and the shop verified the registers were still in use. The establishment in question has 488 Google reviews with an average 4.7 star rating, 202 Facebook reviews. Well, you know, it doesn't really matter. I don't think they're reviewing the Commodore 64 so much. But some of them do mention the Commodore 64. Definitely something that is of interest and unique. Now, aside from the technical curiosity, it seems that Hillegas Bakery is actually well appreciated in its local Brownsburg community for the quality of its pastries and not simply the oddity of using a microcomputer originally released in 1982. This is an example of how technology can continue to be used well past its alleged sunset. It's actually very sensible, they say, when you consider the processing power required to do point-of-sale transactions, which isn't very much. Even for its age, Commodore 64 wasn't particularly overpowered. In fact, its accessible pricing helped it land a spot as the highest-selling single-computer model of all time by the Guinness World Records. That's based on sales estimates as high as 17 million units. You obviously won't be using modern software on one, given its use of BASIC, which I still miss to this day. The BASIC point-of-sale functionality, word processing, etc., is all well within the capabilities of a Commodore 64 and most old PCs in general. So this appears to be one of the bread bin, quite apt for a bakery, bread bin models, as later cost-reduced models moved to a sleeker Arrowhead style. Other than that, there's not much info as to what model this actually is, but Commodore 64. So if you want to see a Commodore 64 in action, you have to head on over to Indiana and find the Hillegas Bakery in Brownsburg. And if I'm ever in Indiana, I certainly will stop by just to see the Commodore 64s.
Absolutely. The pictures are just great to look at of these things being used as, you know, they've got them hooked up to modern LCD displays and everything, but it's a good old Commodore 64, one of the 8-bit computers that I was very fond of back in the day. And, I am just sad that if I go in there, I will have to, you know, get some pastries or something, but they probably won't let me play on the computers and, you know, load up some games, the old Ghostbusters game or something. It's great to see it working, though.
Okay, I guess that's all the thoughts we have on that. Next story is something that I thought was a joke, Rob, because you posted it to our list, and apparently it's not a joke. Forgive me if I sound a little confused here, because for some reason we use this service that sends us stories that have to do with technology, we have an application that makes things printer-friendly. And it's no longer printer-friendly. It prints things now in a 2-point font, which is extremely hard to read, even with a microscope. I'm going to have to struggle to get through this. But there's an Arizona school, and their curriculum will be taught by AI with no teachers. Yeah, I thought this was a joke. I really did. Remember that one teacher who made going to school fun and inspired you to pursue your passions? Well, students at a new charter school in Arizona won't, because they don't get to have teachers. Instead, the 2 hours of academic instruction they receive each day, yes, just 2 hours, will be directed entirely by AI. By a 4-3 margin, the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools approved an application from Unbound Academy to open a fully online school serving grades 4 through 8. Unbound already operates a private school that uses its AI-dependent 2-hour learning model in Texas and is currently applying to open similar schools in Arkansas and Utah. Under the this is unreal. Under the 2-hour learning model, students spend just 2 hours a day using personalized learning programs from companies like IXL and Khan Academy. As students work through lessons on subjects like math, reading, and science, the AI system will analyze their responses, time spent on tasks, and even emotional cues to optimize the difficulty and presentation of content. That's according to Unbound's charter school application in Arizona. This ensures that each student is consistently challenged at their optimal level, preventing boredom or frustration. Spending less time on traditional curriculum frees up the rest of students' days for life skill workshops that cover financial literacy, public speaking, goal setting, entrepreneurship, critical thinking, and creative problem solving, according to the Arizona application. Teachers are replaced by guides who lead those workshops. The student handbook for the Alpha School, the charter school Unbound's founders operate in Texas, claims that its students learn twice as much as standard school students while only spending 2 hours per day on academics. Thanks to financial support and lobbying by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, many public and private schools have integrated personalized learning software like IXL and Khan Academy into their teacher-led curriculum, although experts have questioned whether the programs provide the educational boost they boast about in marketing material. In its Arizona application, Unbound says its bold claims about how much its students will learn are based on the experiments it's running on students in Texas, inspired by Elon Musk. The founders of Unbound Academic Institute begin with opening a high-end private school, Alpha, for the same reason Elon Musk started with higher-end Teslas, to create a product that generates insights and funding for future research and development, the company wrote in its application. You know, you come across a story like this, and you just want to say this, no hope. There's no hope anymore. If people are this stupid that they would put their kids through this and turn everything over to artificial intelligence, not hire actual teachers, think that kids are getting education with 2 hours a day of Elon Musk-inspired crap, that, you know, they deserve what they get. The kids don't deserve it, but boy, I mean, Rob, last chance. This is not a joke, right?
Sadly, it's not. And you can actually find the supporting documents on Arizona's government site for looking up the minutes of these meetings and such. Yeah, this all happened, and it was approved by a 4-3 margin in the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools. So there was some opposition, but it just barely passed. And this whole thing reminds me of in the 1950s and 60s, there was
there was
a scientist called Harry Harlow who ran experiments with monkeys, and a lot of people have been taught about these, where baby monkeys were given a choice of two different substitute mothers, and this is quite a cruel experiment to play on animals, but there were the choice of a cloth mother that was soft and furry and, you know, supportive, whatever, but there was a wireframe mother that could feed the monkey but was otherwise just, you know, cold and unfeeling. And, you know, the whole experiment was about which mother the monkeys would prefer and stuff. And this feels like another such thing. It's like we are experimenting with a school full of children by giving them AI teachers and just seeing how this all shakes out. And I would be terrified if I were a parent by the idea of this.
Alex, you are a parent, so do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I am a parent. I think it's abhorrent that the regional school board here would abdicate responsibility for educating its students to something inane like a curriculum that was sponsored or known or promoted in some way by Elon Musk. It just sounds like they're buying into and feeding into this deification of billionaires and thinking that this is going to have some kind of trickle-down effect on their students, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And like Rob, I'm reminded of things past in some ways. And I think back to maybe 2007 to 2010 era when smartphones were just becoming widely available. And there was that catchphrase from Apple, there's an app for that, when everybody was creating apps to do the most inane, stupid things. And it seems like we're going through that era right now with artificial intelligence, where we think that this is going to be some kind of panacea for all of our woes. It can solve all of our problems. And artificial intelligence is going to save us on so many levels. And I hope that in 10 years from now, we look back at these stupid, idiotic decisions like this one in much the same way as we look back at 2010 and these ridiculous apps that had no legs or longevity to them whatsoever.
Okay.
We need to be able to discern between investments in these technologies that are replacing individuals and those investments that actually are empowering them with these tools and training them to be better, to optimize them, to make them super teachers. And that really is, to me, the litmus, like, where is the investment going? Is it going to the educators and to advancing the field, or upending it and replacing it with robots? Like, that's maybe great for the investor in this case, but I don't think that it's actually beneficial, as beneficial to society as they might think. And they need to test that. Fine, do that testing, but do it outside of a production environment. That you know, I don't know that that went very well with cars. It accelerated some things, but students aren't cars.
Good point. Yeah, students are not these commodities. They're all individual. They all require different attention levels. Very important point. Alex and then Gila.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point here too, Kyle, which is that part of the, I think, just totally missing the point here, or this whole wrong-headed idea of replacing curricula with AI-related content is, look, and don't get me wrong, I've had my fair share of stupid teachers when I was growing up, and you know, I think there are a lot of them, and maybe some of them may or should be supplanted by some kind of AI, but very often it's the intangibles of a relationship with your teacher that have the most effect on people. That connection, that personal connection with a teacher that can make a change in the trajectory of your life, kind of like when you change the trajectory of an arrow by a minuscule amount when you're firing at like 100 yards, right? But it makes a huge change over time. That's what I think students are going to be missing out on, are those relationships and those life-changing moments of personal human connection with their teachers.
Yeah, you know, good point. I'll get to you give them just a second. But, you know, you run into your fourth grade teacher in the grocery store 20 years later, and you get to tell her, you know, you really changed my life. Are you gonna find AI in the future and somehow try and resurrect it and tell it what a difference it made in your life? What kind of society are we moving into? Literally losing the human touch in one of the most, you know, human related parts of our lives, our education. You cannot just transfer that over to a machine. Go ahead, Gila.
Part of my concern, honestly, was the assumption that we're moving into this place where everything needs to be monetized. And my concern is that, so I see that one of the states where this company is applying to start charters is Arkansas, where they've recently and notoriously loosened child labor laws, like, quite significantly. So is the point that, hey, you can go to school for 2 hours and then conveniently we've got other stuff for you to do all day long? I think about this when, you know, you see kids starting sports and you can now pick, like, one sport and you wind up specializing in it, where's the room not just for the personal touch, and I say this as a former teacher, but where's the room to be a kid? Where's your space to run around and do silly things? And, I mean, this also relates to what we were talking about a couple weeks ago with the parent who let her 11-year-old kid walk home and, like, wound up in jail.
Yeah, that I was thinking of the same thing. We're in a society now where you have to abide by these strict confines, and if you don't, you're the problem. And, yeah, kids can't be kids anymore. They can't do things like just walk down the street themselves without being subject to all kinds of investigation and interrogation. Free-range kids, they're the happiest ones, the ones that know their neighborhood and have adventures and misadventures sometimes, too, because that's a part of growing up. And this is not a left-right issue. This is an issue of control, something that affects all of us. And to see technology used against us in this way, and yes, it is against us because it's basically destroying an institution that is so vital. Yeah, Alex said we've had bad teachers, and I've had bad teachers too. But rather than replace them with AI, let's replace them with better teachers. You know, let's take care of the teachers more. Let's make sure that these relationships, including how to interact with other people, are fostered and cherished. Because I guarantee you, these kids are not going to have happy memories of their school days dealing with a computer. No, the happiness from school days comes from interacting with other students and interacting with teachers as well. Yeah, so does the misery. I know that too. But that's all a part of growing up. That's all a part of the experience. So this is a charter school. It's not the public school system. But do any of us think that in states like Arkansas and Texas, the public school system is safe from this kind of nonsense? Because I don't. Rob?
Absolutely not. And as I said, they're trying it at a fancy school, so they can trickle results down to, I'm sure, if this catches on and does not inspire outrage, this will end up being something that they start playing with in public schools. And I'm no great fan of our current public school system, you know, not to go too into stuff, but I consider myself to have been failed by the public school system as a kid. But, like, it is still, like, there were the teachers that were good and that inspired me and who I still remember fondly today. And it has a lot that it did do for me, and they are all things that AI is definitely not equipped to do. They were things that involved individual understanding on a meaningful level, and that is not something AI can do.
So I'm thinking back when, was it earlier this year, last year, what is time, when we were busy trying to get the ChatGPT to write poetry. You remember, and the ChatGPT poetry was bad, and I was writing better poetry than ChatGPT. And I asked ChatGPT, which I am assuming is comparable to what the teaching software would be for these online schools, if it could write a poem in spondaic monometer, which is my favorite poetic foot. And AI claimed that it was impossible to write a poem in spondaic monometer. Now, a good teacher will let you mess around and discover that actually it is possible. It's hard, but it's fun. Spondaic monometer, by the way, a sponde is a foot with two stress syllables, and monometer. So you have two stress syllables in each line. This is a spondaic monometer. Stop that.
Are you kidding me? Can you get maybe a better example than just that?
No, I'm telling you. So a spondaic monometer, a line of spondaic monometer would have two stressed syllables.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
So, like, iambic pentameter, right? You have a stressed and an unstressed syllable, and you have five of those. Da-da, 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 da-da.
Uh-huh.
So, sponde is two stressed syllables, and you have 1 foot of a sponde. One sponde, two stressed syllables. So, a poem would be something like, stop that. Go home. Come here. I mean, it's funny. It's hard to do.
It sounds like Fox News. Is it possible they know about this?
I highly doubt it.
Okay, well, that's, you know, you should teach AI this. I've had some weird conversations with AI over the past 24 hours. I don't know if it's going through some kind of crisis or something. Somebody emailed me, and you might want to try this, saying, ask AI, whatever AI you want, to pick a random number between 1 and 50, and it will pick 27. And I did that, and it picked 27. It was really weird. I tried it again today, and basically it told me that it's impossible for it to pick a random number. So some kind of identity crisis happened in that 24 hours from the same AI that basically would not allow it to do what I had asked it to do merely a day earlier. Another thing that happened was I was basically asking it questions about some subject, and it answered me with an answer to a question from a previous subject. My question had nothing to do with the previous subject. There's no way that you could have misinterpreted it that way. It just reached into its memory banks and gave me something that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. And when I, you know, confronted it with that, saying, hey, you gave me the wrong answer here, it was just all filled with apologies but no explanation. So, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with AI, but I certainly don't depend on it for facts.
Okay. Here's something funny about what you just said. Gil and I are on two different computers here. She's on her laptop. I'm on a desktop. And while you were saying that, we both brought up ChatGPT and asked it to pick a random number between 1 and 50. We both got, as our first answer, the random number I picked is 32 at the same time on two different computers.
Huh.
We both asked it again to pick a random number between 1 and 50. It gave us both 17.
Weird. Okay.
Very.
Want to go for three?
Well, I'm wondering why you didn't get 27. That's strange. Alex, yes, do you have a theory?
Yeah, but while they performed this experiment, I just wanted to comment that wouldn't it have been so much more interesting if the random number chosen across all AIs between 1 and 50 was 42? This made so much more sense.
Well, that would have been funny, but I don't think AI has a sense of humor quite like we do.
Perhaps.
Well, another thing that's been messing up royally, I mentioned the tiny font that I'm dealing with all night long from my printer-friendly app, which doesn't seem to be working. I mean, it might be friendly to the printer. It's not friendly to me. But I also have another service that that Google runs that sends news stories with certain keywords, like, you know, hacker, hacking, that kind of thing. Well, it sent one, but when I went to print it, here's what I got. I got basically a title of unknown title, and then a full page of words about how they use cookies and profiles and just all kinds of things like that, and not a word about the story. I'm looking at this piece of paper now. I have no idea what story it was. When I printed it, there was a story there, but after it went to the printer, it's complete nonsense. And then Google News sent me this other story, which, you know, some of you might have even gotten, too, if you use that service. Police arrest 15-year-old in Northern Ireland over TalkTalk hack, which, you know, is an interesting story. Police arrested a 15-year-old boy in Northern Ireland on Monday over a cyber attack that may have led to the theft of data from among the 4 million customers of British broadband provider TalkTalk. The attack, which took place on Wednesday, prompted the company to deny accusations, blah, blah, blah. If you go through this whole story, which I almost pulled for tonight's show, you might not read the tiny print at the top that says this story is from 2015. But somehow Google has decided this is new and has pushed it to a lot of people, and I've seen the story show up on Google News. So I'm just wondering, is there going to be a newspaper somewhere that prints this as a new story without checking the date that appears in tiny print? And this is a way that robotic news reporting can really mess you up. You know, if you don't check the date, you might be spreading all kinds of old news or just complete misinformation.
Yeah. And that would be the right use of the word misinformation, too. Right? This is kind of wrong information by a mistake here. But I really am wondering if that something like this could be used nefariously, if maybe just tweaking how an article is stored on a website's content management system so that Google picks it up again, or it looks appreciably different or has a different hash associated with it or something, can trick Google itself into thinking that old news is new news. That could be pretty dangerous to wield during election times and whatnot.
Well, during any times, but if that is something that is even remotely possible, you know, I think we have an obligation to try and make that happen so that we can show that people should not rely on these kinds of services. It's very easy to manipulate them. Speaking of easily manipulated, this guy, Vivek Ramaswamy, I can't believe I still have to talk about this moron. His Twitter account was hacked, which caused a stir online because it had a fraudulent post claiming a partnership between the U.S. Department of Government Efficiency, known as DOGE, and the stablecoin issuer Usual, USUAL, I'm not supposed to pronounce that or not. The post, which promised to address the federal fiscal deficit and promote digital currencies for economic stability, was quickly deleted after Ramaswamy's team identified the breach. The now-deleted post claims the partnership would help streamline government transactions and promote fiscal responsibility using digital currencies. However, cybersecurity experts confirmed the tweet was part of a scam to promote fake crypto initiatives. We are moving into a very weird period of history where you have idiots who don't know how to even keep their Twitter accounts safe, are running government agencies now, are deeply mired in the cryptocurrency world, and you won't be able to tell the difference between misinformation and fact that they are attempting to spread. So yet another example of this, and boy, it's going to be fun come next month. Alex?
This is something that's actually been going around Twitter for the last week or so, but there are quite sophisticated scams that are targeting users for some kind of alleged copyright violation. So it may say something like, your last post violated our community guidelines with respect to copyright rights of third parties, et cetera. You need to log in to address this. It then asks you to log in using your password and kind of ordinary credentials harvester that you would expect, and then kind of sends you the SMS that you would actually get from Twitter. So they're doing this in the back end as well, and you actually funnel your two-factor authentication SMS message over to the attacker. They then take over the account and have been pushing out these pump-and-dump cryptocurrency scams for the last week or so, and a lot of people have gotten caught up in them. And they're going after very high-profile accounts, obviously, because they have a lot of reach. What I would tell our listeners is that these emails may be very, very difficult to distinguish between with respect to illegitimate and legitimate items here. But what you can always do is take a look at the sender. You want to look at the entire email address, not just what shows up in your email client as a name, but look at the actual email address. You will very often see a domain name that has something like content-report, and then it'll end in -x.com. So the entire domain might have something to do with password resets or something like that, but then it'll end in -x.com. And that is not the same at all as x.com. It creates a sense of visual similarity to give you the feeling that you are in a secure space. But these imposter domains are getting more sophisticated, but always detectable by looking for that -x.com.
I would extend this even further to say don't trust anything you read on x.com because it's filled with trolls.
That's true. Yes.
Trolls and rip-off artists and just evil people that basically will get you to click on something that is unsafe. And especially if it's somebody, you know, like Vivek or anyone else from the Trump regime, don't trust them as far as you can throw them. And it's up to you to measure how far that is. Quickly now, last 2 minutes, popular doorbell camera brands contain security flaws, making them easy to hack. Some video doorbells sold by companies like Walmart and Amazon have security flaws that allow them to be easily hacked. That's according to a report from Consumer Reports. It was released last Wednesday, found that video doorbells that seem to be made by the same manufacturer and sold under different brand names, including Fishbot, Ekin, and Tuck, can be taken over by someone who can physically access them, create an account on a smartphone app owned by Ekin, visit someone's home, hold down a doorbell button, and put it into pairing mode. If you see somebody in your front porch doing that, be suspicious. Now, following these actions, someone could link the doorbell with a Wi-Fi hotspot and take over the doorbell, making them the owner of the doorbell, and now having the ability to see those who arrive and those who leave. The original owner of the doorbell can regain control of the doorbell. Once again, someone has the serial number. They can still have access to images via the doorbell, the video feed. You know what? You can regain access to your doorbell by going up to the doorbell affected and basically getting a firm grip on it and pulling it out of your door and throwing it in the trash can and putting a regular doorbell in there and trying to forget when you were so foolish as to buy something like this in the first place. There are other ways to monitor who's coming to your door, but something that somebody can physically access, no, that's probably not the best way. Any thoughts, debate on that? We have 1 minute.
I have no plans to buy a computer I can't control properly and attach it to the front of my house.
Or anywhere else, for that matter.
It's just crazy. You know, everything is getting hacked. And it's not that there are, you know, more hackers out there. It's that people are basically trusting every device in their home and using it as an entry point to their home network. You know, refrigerator, ovens, doorbells. It's really absurd. It's funny, but it could really be hazardous as well. All right, we're going to be moving on over to YouTube, over on Channel 2600 for our overtime show starting at 8 p.m. You can call us. And we'll be doing the call-in feature on Off the Hook on WBAI, I'd say about once a month, sounds about right. Next week, of course, will be our New Year's Eve show. That ought to be a lot of fun. Write to us, OTH at 2600.com, and please don't forget to donate to WBAI. Go to buddy.wbai.org and pledge whatever you can afford on a monthly basis. And you can identify Off the Hook as your favorite show, if it is, in fact, your favorite show. But the most important thing is to keep 99.5 FM commercial-free and on the air for the next 65 years. We'll see you next week on BAI. A few minutes on overtime. Good night.
Go to rest, ye merry billionaires. Let nothing you dismay. Forget your workers' families going hungry on this day. And save yourselves from income tax you'll never need to pay. Oh, tidings of corruption and greed. Corruption and greed. Oh, tidings of corruption and greed. In Washington and London town, you pay the lobby fees to hold the reins both left and right of sham democracies and keep us entertained so we don't know we're on our knees. Oh, tidings of corruption and greed, corruption and greed. Oh, tidings of corruption. Fear not, ye say, the media, they only sing your praise. The job creator gave us all that's good and all that pays. Be thankful for your stable beds and don't ask for a raise. Oh, tidings of corruption and greed, corruption and greed. Oh, tidings of corruption and greed. The Prince of Peace you call him while you make war in his name. A man with no possessions made a shield for earthly gain. Imagine all the people led by men who have no shame. Oh, tidings of corruption and greed, corruption and greed. Oh, tidings of corruption and greed.